What's up, Florida State sports fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Knoll Sports Podcast. Kurt Weiler here with Andre Fernandez. It would seem that we're in a healthier week for the Florida State football team. Obviously, we talked last week about Mike Norvell acknowledging the flu that was going around the team, the bug. I don't know if we realized how bad it was going to be going into Saturday at the time. Obviously, no Jordan Travis, no a few more players that were key reserves, if not starters, and it definitely had an impact in Florida State's game, the 28-14 loss to NC State over the weekend.
Yeah, massive impact. I mean, I think especially you saw it on the offensive end in the first half. I mean, their offense, I mean, sputtered, doesn't even cover it. They barely could move the football, couldn't run the ball well the entire game. And, you know, a lot of that stemming from the quarterback situation, a little bit up front with Dylan Givens out. You know, he's been one of their best run blockers, if not the best run blocker they've had this year. You know, and then just, you know, but again, the team, you know, battles back. We're sitting there thinking this is getting out of hand. It's probably going to be 35-0 before we can blink. And all of a sudden, Sean Payton's coaching the Seminoles and, you know, kicking onside kicks, you know, Mike Norvell, you know, takes a cue from the ex Super Bowl winner and surprises everybody, and all of a sudden that sparks everything, and you thought for a second they had a chance, but NC State pulls away there at the end. But again, it was just a tough week overall, because it's a shame, because when you look back on the potential this team had to bounce back from a tough loss at Clemson, it's one of those where you may look back on it at the end of the year and think, you know, and regret. It's too bad they had all that going against them, because that was a winnable game, and even against an opponent like NC State, which is, you know, ranked and in the fight for the ACC, you know, Atlantic Division title, et cetera. But you know, you felt good about their chances had they been at full strength.
Yeah, I mean, especially like you said, as the game progressed. I mean, NC State's defensive line, I mean, obviously you lose like Dylan Givens it's a tough loss. I mean, it's like a great run blocker for them. I mean, and so I think his role, obviously his absence was felt. I think obviously Jordan Travis's absence was really felt. No offense to Mackenzie Milton, but if it wasn't already clear, I think especially the first half of that game just shows, I mean, the state of this team. I think there's a team where McKenzie could be successful. It's not this team with an offensive line in such flux, without receivers that can win one-on-ones. It's just he in his current state, miraculous recovery aside, is not going to be, I think, the former player he was. And he also isn't surrounded by the type of team he was at UCF. So, I mean, it's tough for him. He obviously, he like you said, I mean, spurred by that onside kick, which was interesting. John Papucci, as a special teams coordinator, talked about how earlier in the week Mike Norvell kind of suggested maybe something like that. And the situation definitely presented itself where NC State was definitely not expecting it whatsoever. The front line of those kick return guys vacated and let Parker Grothaus make a great play. That sparked something. I mean, obviously the two straight touchdown drives there. They had two more drives with a chance to tie the game. But yeah, it was just all of it was too much to overcome. I mean, we talked about last week the Jordan bandwagon. I think last week was kind of the last proof anyone should need that he is the best option for right now. Whether he's long-term or not, he is absolutely the best option right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a question of style, right? And he, you know, what he can bring, you know, the dual threat ability, it just helps so much, you know, to elevate this offense and really give them a chance. And I think if you saw it, and if you were on the anti-Jordan, you know, rhetoric the week before, I think you got a pretty good taste of, hey, you got what you wanted, right? You know, now look at it. So, you know, it looks like Jordan will be back against Miami. No official word, obviously. That won't be till we know right before kickoff. But all signs kind of are pointing to that with him coming back to practice this week. He looked a lot better. Even talking to the media on Wednesday, you know, he looked kind of like his old self again. And they need it. And they need it because this is a team, you know, going into this big emotional rivalry game against Miami, against the team that can score points with the best of them and has been one of the best offenses in the ACC in the last month or so since Tyler Van Dyke took over. FSU is going to have to be able to, that offense is going to have to move the ball. They're going to have to run the football. They're going to have to score points. And Jordan Travis being back gives the Seminoles a chance.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a you feel like, I mean, if you feel good about him playing right now, it's obviously not a sure thing, but with what he was able to do at practice, I mean, that he was able to talk to the media, that speaks to, I would say, a lot. Any path to a win this weekend, you feel like, has to go through Jordan Travis. I mean, it's a Miami's defensive line is not as good as the two they just faced. I mean, obviously, Corey Durden, a former Seminole, definitely made an impact in that game. I mean, with the state of FSU's offensive line. But even if the Miami line isn't as good as the last two they faced, they're just, if it's not Jordan and all that he brings to the table, you just don't see they're going to be new enough. Because it seems like, I mean, you look at it, who knows? Weird things can happen. It's a rivalry. Say all those rivalry cliches of throwing out the record book, of throwing out the records, throwing out all that. This feels like it's going to be a shootout. It feels like, I mean, with the run Miami's been on offensively, it feels like you're going to have to beat them that way. And it's possible it happens. For Miami's defense, there's been some improvement lately. I still don't think it's an especially great defense. It's definitely not nearly the defense you faced the last 2 weeks. With Jordan, I think the opportunities are going to be there. Some guys are going to have to make plays. Those receivers are going to have to win one-on-ones. The running backs are going to have to kind of find their form that they haven't had the last 2 weeks. I do think those opportunities will present themselves. It's about making plays. And so we'll see if they're able to, because it feels like that's how they would have to win this next week.
Yeah, and I think the key, too, is, like you said, with the Hurricanes, I think the strength of that defense is the secondary. And, you know, they're young, you know, freshmen like James Williams and Cameron Kitchens. You know, Avante Williams has stepped in recently. They've got the Georgia transfer, Tyreek Stevenson. I mean, to me, that's where the best part of that defensive unit lies. And that's the whole thing. By having Travis in as starter, you make that defense work more up front to try and keep him in check, you know, to get the running game going, that sort of thing. If it was the other way around and you rely more on the pass, then you're asking a lot from FSU's wide receivers to have to continuously win those battles against that quality secondary. I think this matchup swings it in that sense a little more for FSU because of that. I mean, to me, it's imperative that they run the football, but I think they will be able to, because a lot of teams have been able to on the Canes, even recently during their winning streak. We saw Georgia Tech have some, you know, break some big plays on that and on that part of it too. So, again, and it's been a little bit, you understand why, but at the same time, it's been a little bit concerning seeing the FSU's running game not do it the past couple of weeks. So this is the kind of game where you would hope that they can kind of regain that form they had when they were putting up 200 yards a game or even close to that, even maybe not a specific number, but just the fact of being able to control the football. And as cliche as this sounds, it's going to keep Miami's offense grounded if they can sustain some drives and do it that way as well. So it all plays to their advantage if they're with Jordan back there making plays both with his legs and then hitting the occasional big play downfield if possible.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, you brought up, I guess, worry over the run game. I wouldn't say I'm too worried at the moment. I mean, even against Clemson, not as much NC State, but even against Clemson that had a better run defense than NC State, best in the ACC, they had their moments, and those are probably the two best run defenses you're going to play all year in Clemson and NC State. So I would say I'm not too worried about the run game unless there are problems again this weekend. You worry that Trayshawn Ward, for as much of an asset as he's been, he hasn't looked quite the same since, you feel like, that fumble in the Clemson game in a critical moment. I don't know. I mean, is that something that someone gets in their head about a little bit? I mean, he never really got going against NC State. But, like, I mean, the opportunity should be there this weekend. The hole should be there. The ability to make a play. Having Jordan back obviously makes a big difference. I know Mike Norvell's going to downplay that. He doesn't want to openly dog McKenzie and when he's at quarterback, how it limits things. But there's no doubt it makes it easier for the running backs when they have Jordan and his running threat with them in the backfield. So I wouldn't say I would be too worried unless it's a problem again this weekend.
One thing I think they're going to need to do is also get these running backs the ball out of the passing game as well. And that's something else that Jordan's been good at. It's finding them, you know, for these short, quick plays in space, get them going. because Miami, as we know, has been one of the worst tackling teams in the country, period, over the entire season. You know, if they've improved, it's been a little, but nothing to the point where they're not, you know, bit by that week after week. So if they can get those types of play, kind of like the quick hitters, get guys like Jayshon Corbin the ball where they're a little more of an ability to break loose and make a big play, get a lot of yards after the catch, that's going to be huge, because I think they're going to be able to take advantage of some of that against Miami's linebackers and even their secondary when it comes to just, you know, corralling these guys. They just haven't really done a good job this year. So that's something that maybe the Seminoles can use to their advantage.
Yeah, we've seen the receivers make plays in moments, not as much the last 2 weeks. Obviously, the big play in the pass game a few weeks ago was 2 weeks ago against Clemson was Lawrence Toe-Philly play, and he's obviously A, running back, and B, doesn't seem like going to be available. I think that injury he suffered at the end of that game, with only 3 weeks left, it seems like something that may keep him out the rest of the way. I'm not basing that off anything I've heard. I'm going off of what it seems like. And what I mean, his not being present at this past Saturday's game. NC State, I mean, the receivers again, they faced a lot of man coverage, and they did not handle man coverage very well at all from that NC State defense. I mean, it's and we'll see. I mean, it's quite possible they have that again, and they have to beat man coverage. We'll see if they're more up to it this week. I would say it's been a little bit better of a week of practice from them this week. Terry Wilson's made some plays. Andrew Parchment's had a pretty good week of practice. You don't know how much to read into that, but it also, I mean, it's going to be a game where McDermott and Kenny Dillingham are going to have to scheme some things open. I mean, we've seen that. We saw, I mean, in the NC State game, they kind of made a drastic change with the offense at halftime, something they hadn't really practiced, of how far they were splitting the receivers out wide just to kind of spread out the defense and hope that could do something for the run game. And it worked at times, but what we've seen with the state of this team talent-wise, especially the offense, they're going to have to, as they have, scheme things open and probably hit on some big plays.
Yeah. I mean, but that's why I said, like what I was saying before about Miami secondary, and more specifically Miami secondary, the safeties are the ones that have been the best. So I think that's why I think the underneath game is going to be so important to get even beyond the running backs, you know, get Cameron McDonald if he's available, or Jordan Wilson, you know, get them the ball. This is the kind of game where, like, Keyshawn Helton has to have a big game. You know, Ontario Wilson has to have a big game, and not just to maybe hit a play downfield, but catch some of that underneath stuff and make some plays. You know, get loose. You know, break tackles, that sort of thing, and that'll sustain the drives we were talking about, to just control possession and have the ball. I think all those little things will add up if they can do them consistently in this game. That's kind of the way they have to attack the defense a little bit if they're, you know, facing Miami.
Yeah, and unlike Clemson, where I think we thought it was unsustainable for them to be able to like have like sustained drives and stay on the field 4 minutes at a time and pick up a number of first downs in a row, yeah. I think the chance could be there against this Miami defense. Yeah. This Miami defense has not been so impressive. Like you said, with the missed tackles, susceptible on the ground. The opportunity could be there, like, to extend drives. I mean, will be interesting. I mean, obviously, Mike Norvella came under some fire and from the fan base, and I would say I don't think he made a bad decision with the some of the fourth down decisions he made in that NC State game, specifically about with what eight minutes left, going for it on fourth and four to not getting it. The pass is broken up, intended for Ontario Wilson, who kind of let the DB come in and break up the play. And obviously turnover and downs, and I think three plays after that, NC State scored what was basically the dagger touchdown to make it 28-14. It's definitely a game where, in order to sustain those drives, you may see similar fourth down decisions. Depends on the part of the field they're on. Depends on stuff like that. But, I mean, it is definitely a game in what you think could be a shootout where you're trying to reduce number of possessions, yeah, like you did with Clemson. You're trying to, if you can have a 7 or 8 minute drive that makes it so Miami gets one or two less possessions in a half, that's huge.
Yeah. No, I think you're going to see it on both sides. I think in Manny Diaz's side of it for Miami, you might see that same kind of thing. And then it's going to come down to who can execute on fourth down the best, you know, and more often than not, we've seen FSU not in that situation, but there have been times where they have and have been able to sustain it. But I think it's going to be paramount. I mean, what worries me more in this game is, not worries me, I shouldn't say worry, but FSU's defense, how they're going to be able to slow down this Miami passing game, especially because they've done a good job pressuring the quarterback all season. That has to continue, and it can't just be Jermaine Johnson. Keir Thomas has been on a tear lately. He's going to have to step up. Those interior guys are going to have a good game, and they're going to have to just rattle Van Dyke as much as possible and just create some havoc in the backfield. You can't let them sit back there and pick you apart, because Charleston Rambo is a cover nightmare, especially for this secondary, these cornerbacks that have had so much trouble this year. You know, he's over there putting up 200-yard games now, and just his ability and the way he can stretch the field. And then Miami can hit you with Mike Harley, who can go deep or underneath, you know, similar in that sense to kind of like the underneath game we were talking about. They can burn you there as well. So, you know, and then they come back with Jalen Knighton in the running game too to kind of balance that off. So this is going to be a big challenge for them in terms of being able to do that and being able to stop the run themselves. And also on special teams, you're talking about possessions and where you are on the field and all of that. I mean, we know historically, one way or the other, the way that this series tends to come down to field goal kicking. And it makes you a little nervous. I'd be nervous on both sides. And I think I wrote that in my edges comparison. Whether you're Borregales, who struggled for Miami a little bit, or whether you're Ryan Fitzgerald, who it's not even so much struggling, it's just the inactivity. He hasn't even taken a field goal. He hasn't even tried a field goal. I think one in the last four games. I mean, it's kind
of making extra points, but those aren't the same.
No, right? That's not the same, right? And not in a pressure situation. And we've seen some inconsistency this year from him. I mean, he missed against Notre Dame, but he came through against Syracuse. So, I mean, that element is so unpredictable too, if it comes down to that. But and the lack of a return game on both sides, but especially with FSU, really hurts, because if it comes down to one of those close field position battles, how confident do you feel that they're A, going to make the right decisions back there, you know, returning kicks, or B, even make a play that can kind of flip the field? We really haven't seen that from the Noles this year at all, you know, on that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're looking at two kickers who you mentioned Fitzgerald with the Notre Dame overtime that they lose on. And then Andres Borregales, the freshman who's following in his brother's footsteps as the grad transfer, who's having a really good year. I mean, he's made 75% of his field goals. He's 12-16, but he also has a bad late-game miss. He doinked the one off the upright for them to lose at home to Virginia. And given this team is definitely different from that team. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's done himself a lot of favors with the last few weeks. And I would say you talked about Tyler Van Dyke. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke may have saved Manny Diaz's job. I'm not sure if he doesn't have the tear he's been on lately. I'm not sure Manny is still the coach, and I definitely don't. It's hard to see him survive the season, which I would say it seems more likely than not will happen now.
You could take the word may out of that sentence. He absolutely has saved his job. And I don't even know if he even saved the job. I'd say he's temporarily put a Band-Aid on the job, maybe, depending on how they finish the season. So, I mean, yeah, there's no doubt about it. He's at, and it's interesting because if you think about it, both these quarterbacks have been at the epicenter of the turnaround for each team. I mean, I know FSU's dropped the last two, but the hole that they were in at 0-4, Jordan Travis is at the heart of why they kind of dug themselves out of it and won three games and upset North Carolina, had a chance at Clemson. And then on the flip side, Van Dyke, what he's done for Miami. So it's also an intriguing quarterback matchup, assuming Jordan plays, to see how both these QBs have led their teams to this point and really given themselves, put more importance on this game than it definitely would have had each team continued on the skids that they were on early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it no longer feels like – I know we were skeptical and wrong. I may have said on this podcast that I wasn't sure or didn't think Manny was going to make it to this game. Yeah, he has.
I didn't think so either.
Even if they were to lose Saturday, I still think he's fine. I don't think he's getting fired this week.
No, he's not getting fired this week, but if they lose this week and there's a carryover effect and they finish badly and they
– Well – I mean, as crazy as it is, this Miami team that was 2-4 it doesn't control its own destiny in the ACC Coastal, but it's not too far off.
No, they're right in the hunt. I mean, yeah. You talked about the doink off the upright. If that doesn't happen, they're in the driver's seat right now.
Yep.
But I mean, that's how close they are. I mean, they need some help because of that loss to Virginia, but it doesn't take much, Kurt, as you know, to raise the temperature on the hot seat down in Miami. So if they lose this game, the seat's not going to feel so comfortable going in the next week, and that's going to mount, and then who knows? It'll just depend on whether or not what it looks like by season's end, if they're in a bowl, what kind of bowl do they, all that sort of thing. And not only that, but I think just from perspective, from being down there in the past and everything, I just know that there's a little, I call it a Band-Aid, because I think for now, I think people will be okay, I guess content with, okay, yeah, we're fighting for the ACC title. And then if they did go on and do that, that's obviously huge for their program. But the not so realistic crowd, which is very heavy down there, is going to want more. And if this is a 6-6 season, they're not going to care. And I think that's where his job definitely goes back to being in jeopardy.
I mean, let's be real. Miami fans dealt with that 7-year losing streak to FSU from 2010 to 2016. They felt every one of those years. I'm sure things felt pretty futile, and they've definitely been enjoying. I mean, the four game winning streak they're on now, and last year, I mean, absolutely demolishing FSU.
Yeah,
there were a bunch of factors that went into that. I mean, it being FSU's first road game under Norvell not being there because he had COVID, and so Kenny Dillingham had to kind of take full reins of the offense. And no offense to Kelly, he's a great offensive mind, but they collaborate about that for a reason, you know? I think a team without its hard head coach, it probably is hard not to feel a little listless at times in moments like that. I don't know. I mean, I'm struggling to get a read on this game. A thing that I do think that I'll be interested to see, as great as Tyler Van Dyke has looked, and I don't want to discredit him at all, I do think this is about to be the best defensive line he's played.
It's possible. I mean, I think the line itself, yes. I think because so much of what FSU does well in defense comes from that line.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
It's, what is it, 21.5 out of the 25 sacks have been them. I mean,
it's the opposite of last year. Last year, they didn't have many sacks, and a good number of them did not come from the line. This year, it's been a lot of the line, and I think it's because they get enough pressure with the line that they don't feel the need to blitz the linebackers, blitz DBs as often as they did last year.
Right. And so much of that disguises the deficiencies and the inexperience behind them, you know, that comes into play sometimes. And that's why it's huge for them. The defensive line has to win this game for the Seminoles on that side of the ball. And the running game up front is going to be the story. It's going to they have to run the football like they're used to. And the D-line is going to have to win this game. I mean, I think it's going to take – we're going to have to see – if FSU wins this game, the vision I have for it is a play like what Jermaine Johnson did near the end of the Clemson game. There has to be some play like that. There has to be some game momentum swinging turnover created that leads to points, whether on the actual play or right after setting up a short field, something like that. They're going to have to make plays like that to win this game.
There, I mean, and it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually just looking at these numbers. There's obviously a sense of luck that goes into turnovers. That being said, Miami is dead last in the ACC in turnover margin this year, -6. Yeah. Florida State's not a ton better at -4, but a lot of that's from the Wake Forest game where they had 6, and I think they were -4.
Yeah.
They have gradually gotten better in that regard. I think were they 0 against NC State? Were they one each, right?
Yeah, that's where you regret last week because they couldn't continue the role they had been on. But you also understand because NC State's been one of the cleanest teams overall in terms of not turning the ball over. So
from all indications, this team will give you a chance.
Yes, no doubt about it.
I say that. They've thrown 8 interceptions. Van Dyke's, I think, only thrown 1 the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. But
they've also... Yeah. They've also fumbled 6 times or lost 6 fumbles. They've probably fumbled more than 6 times.
Yeah.
They've also only forced 8 turnovers.
Right. No, I'm with you. I think even more on the fumble side, on the protecting on ball security. I think this is not they're nowhere near a great team when it comes to that. So I think that's something, again, that they have to take advantage. And if they do get in the backfield, Van Dijk himself has lost the ball a couple times this year. So I think it's something that they have to look for. That's what I'm saying. I think I could see that Jermaine Johnson strip sack. Maybe it's not Jermaine, it's someone else. But I think a play, they have to make a play like that in this game to win it.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. It'll be interesting. I mean, obviously we talked about Van Dijk, but he may not be the it remains to be seen if he's kind of the best quarterback they'll play this year. No doubt he's been on a roll, but I think more likely Charleston Rambo is the best receiver they've played this year, quite possibly. I mean, he's been an absolute monster for them. FSU picked up Andrew Parchment from the portal before Charleston Rambo entered the portal. I'm not sure that would have made a difference, but I'm sure there is a sense of regret when you look at what Rambo's done for Miami and what Parchment's done for FSU.
Yeah, I'd say I would definitely have a regret. I mean, when you look at an NFL talent, a surefire NFL talent like Rambo, and you know, the speed, the hands, the whole package. He's not super tall, but he's got a good frame. I mean, this kid, what he's been able to do, you could see why he played at Oklahoma. Probably even the Sooners right now are wishing they had him back, you know. And
yeah,
I mean, it's pretty crazy. That's why he's gonna be a matchup nightmare on the boundary in this game. And that's where I think the defense, if they don't put pressure and don't rattle Van Dijk, he's gonna have the chance at least to pick them apart in the middle, underneath, all that kind of thing. And that's what FSU really needs to avoid.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, you look at last week. Obviously, there were some of those defensive lapses we hadn't seen in a while. The blown coverage or miscommunication early that led to the long touchdown. A few brutal missed tackles, one from Akeem Dent, one from Jerrion Jones, that led to, I think, 3 40-yard touchdowns. I mean, the defense didn't have a bad game. They were just bad in moments. What's interesting, though, is that Florida State, for the most part, I mean, almost entirely took away NC State's most prolific receivers. Mm-hmm. Emeka Emezi had 2 catches. Thayer Thomas had 1.
Yep.
It was tight ends and lesser receivers that killed them. So does that speak to, I mean, how are they going to be able to handle a true number one?
Right.
Like they handled it pretty well last week, and someone like Emezi or someone like Thomas in the slot. But I mean, Rambo is even kind of a truer number one than either of those guys. I mean, it will be a real test for a Jerrion Jones, for a Jarvis Brownlee, whoever matches up with him.
Yeah, take it back a few weeks, and Josh Downs, they did a solid job against him too. I think he didn't break too much on them either. But yeah, Rambo's a different animal, and that's the whole point is even if they pay a ton, you know, even if they pay all their attention on Rambo, they really can't afford to, because that's where, you know, guys like Harley, guys like Keyshawn Smith can. And another X factor could be the tight end. I mean, they haven't really thrown it to Will Mallory like they did last year, but this could be one of those games where they could look to him a little bit more, just if the middle's a little more open, you know, and there's opportunities there, just because so much defensive attention will be put on the outsides to try and slow down Rambo.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what the crowd looks like there. Obviously, senior day, and it's an unusual senior day. Actually, Florida State just today finally got like a final list of who they're going to be honoring. I know they've kind of been figuring out, talking with some guys. I know a couple guys who I think have eligibility left because of
the extra year,
COVID, and how that affects it, are still kind of choosing to move on. So, I mean, what's interesting, though, you've got some veterans on that list, a guy like Emmett Rice, who is in his 6th year and is, I guess, hoping to make a debut against kind of his hometown team Saturday. He's from Miami Gardens, so But then what's interesting is
went to Miami Norland, which is 5 minutes from Hard Rock Stadium, by the way.
There you go.
So
in terms of how they organized this list, which seems somewhat in terms of like the careers they had at Florida State, you got Emmett up top. The next 5 guys are all transfers. You got 4 1-year transfers in Keir Thomas, Andrew Parchment, Mackenzie Milton, Jermaine Johnson, and then a 2-year transfer who was really only supposed to be a 1-year transfer in Jordan Wilson, but got hurt last year and got the COVID year this year to come back because of that.
Right.
So, I mean, of the you add in Devontae Love Taylor, who's also a second-year transfer. I mean, that's, what, six of the seven, like, top guys who've played the most in their careers here, who you're honoring, are transfers. I mean, it speaks to the state of the team. I'll be interested to see what the crowd looks like. It's a 3:30. A night would definitely help the crowd, I imagine. More people maybe a bit more willing.
Yeah.
And it always feels like, for whatever reason, night games just have that extra intensity. Obviously, in this rivalry, I remember you were talking about a while ago that Miami has not done well in Dope Campbell Stadium in night games. Won't be that, although it will be dark by the time the game ends.
Yeah, but I mean, in games that would have been 8 p.m. kickoffs, 7:30, that type of thing. Yeah, I did a little homework on that, and I think other than, I want to say, 09, when Ja'Cory Harris was Miami's quarterback and they won that game, I think every other game that kicked off that late at Doak, going back to the early 80s, FSU has won. So when the 3:30 came out, you thought, maybe that was
The last few weeks, both got this game and the NC State game both got 6-day option where they didn't get announced the time until the Saturday before, late the Saturday before, after the week before's games. It felt like they wanted this to be a night, but they kind of, with two straight losses from Florida State, they just kind of struggled to put a 3-6 Florida State on a primetime, probably ESPN or maybe primetime AC Network spot, you know?
Yeah, in spite of the rivalry, but yeah, like, I think I agree. I mean, I think the rivalry is going to help the crowd. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be – I don't think it's going to be maybe like filled to the brim, but I think you're going to see a better crowd than we've seen the last couple home games.
Agreed.
Because it's the rivalry, because it's Miami, more Noles fans will be attracted to go – And you have the Miami crowd that's going to come up. There's always a not huge, but a decent contingent that makes the trip up from down there. And I think that'll just add to it. You know, I think you'll have I don't think it'll top the season opener where you really had the place, you know, pretty much full against Notre Dame. But I think it'll be probably their best crowd since then.
I agree. I think it'll be well above like this. It barely passed 50,000. I think last week, like announced attendance.
Yeah, you may hit 60.
More than that. I think it could be 60 plus.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that.
It'll be interesting to see what role that could have, because if it's remotely close to that, I mean, we talked about the best defensive line that Van Dyke will have played. It would also be probably the first really hostile road atmosphere he's played in.
Yeah.
I haven't been at that North Carolina's not an especially hostile atmosphere. Pitt's not an especially hostile atmosphere there at Heinz Field.
Right.
If you're able to really build that, it feels like it'd be the first time, the most intense visiting crowd he may be dealing with, if that plays any role at all, if you're able to rattle.
And I think a lot of that, again, not just the beginning of the game, but it depends on their start too. Like it can't happen again where FSU's down immediately 14-0.
All but one game this
year. And this is one of those games where if that happens again, they're in trouble. They're in trouble because at that point, if you're only trading scores, forget it. You know, they have to have a better start, and that'll only feed into the possibility of getting your 50-ish out of the 60-ish thousand that are your faithful, you know, going and making the place loud.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're recording this Thursday, so 2 days out. I guess where's your head at? We haven't made our picks yet in our article, but where's your head at?
Where's your head at? Yeah. I think I've for a while. You know, we both said, I think we both agree it's a high scoring game. I mean, I'm in that 38-31, 37-30, maybe closer if it comes down to a kick again. But I mean, I don't know. I think FSU to me more of the pressure is on Miami because they have more to lose from this game, I think, overall, because of they've created themselves a window to win the ACC. Maybe not a great window, but not a bad window either. And that goes out the window if they lose this game, realistically, because as it is, they need both Virginia and Pittsburgh to lose and run the table to get it done. So a loss here would pretty much kick them out of that. And I think, like we talked about before, all the Manny Diaz stuff, everything, all that's going to start resurfacing if they lose to FSU. So I think FSU, while, yes, some people in Tallahassee are restless because the team's 3-6 and whatnot, but I think there's a little more, not a little, I think there's a decent more amount of yes, this is that we're in just in that kind of a season, but let's see what direction in the big picture this goes, all of that, where a loss wouldn't be as devastating as it would be for the Hurricanes. So all that being said, I have to pick Miami in this game, but I think FSU will put up not only a good fight, I think they make it close and they will have a chance at the end. Now, all the factors that I talked about before, I think that will decide whether they can pull it off or not. It wouldn't surprise me if they did, but based on what Miami's done the last few weeks and the fact that they didn't screw it up for themselves last week against Georgia Tech showed me a lot, because in the past, as I've told you, I've seen them rattle off those, you know, big wins like they had against Carolina against Pitt and NC State, and then turn around and lose to a team they're not supposed to. And they didn't do that last week. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. I don't know. I don't know why I'm feeling pulled towards FSU a little bit. We'll see if I have the guts to make that call tomorrow when I'm sitting down to make my pick, when I'm writing that story.
Jordan Travis is making me second guess a little bit too, if that makes you feel any better.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I just feel there are some factors at play. I mean,
they have all the that's why I gave them the intangibles edge too, because they have the spoilers edge at home, back to, you know, relatively full strength in key areas. All that stuff is in their favor.
It would be quite the statement for Mike Norvell in his first time coaching in an in-state rivalry game. I mean, it's crazy. He's made almost 2 years, and this will be, obviously, they didn't play Florida last year. He missed last year's Miami game due to COVID. So this will be his first time on the sidelines for one of these games.
No doubt. I mean, and that's why on the flip side of that, if you look at it big picture, and I know, like, earlier this week, my good friend Manny Navarro down there and I was on his podcast, and we talked about that. This is one of those games that if you look at, take a step back, and let's not talk, we're not talking about records or anything right now. Let's just say, like, the direction that programs are going right now. The Gators are in shambles right now.
Yep.
FSU is, you know, the record's not pretty, but you get the general feel like there's something here, there's something that's being built. Miami, who knows, because they went from fire Manny and blow it up to... now we might win the ACC. Whoever wins this game just feels like, out of the big three, is probably the one that's trending most in the right direction. Because then a loss here almost sends Miami back into a little bit of disarray. It's such a confidence booster in spite of the record for Mike Norvell, like you just said. You know, and so I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. Like, that's how big this win can be for either side right now.
It bears mentioning, definitely. This is, I mean, recruiting's been going on all year. They've had the visitors and all, but this is definitely the biggest recruiting weekend since Notre Dame. Marvin Jones Jr. has had this visit on the books as his official visit weekend for a long time.
Yep.
He will be there. He is still, I would say, at least somewhat, probably to different degrees, considering both of these teams.
Yep.
I'm not entirely convinced that an Alabama or an Ohio State doesn't win out for him. He is definitely that caliber of player. I mean, he's a borderline five-star, debatably should be number 37 prospect in the class. But you would be interested to see how it feels like Florida State has to have at least a good showing here to really be in it. You know, it would be interesting if they don't, it's not especially competitive, how that affects things with Marvin Jones Jr., who has those legitimate offers from those top tier schools. Obviously, he has the family tie to Florida State. He has the area tied to Miami, but can either of those win out? It'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, a couple other big visitors coming. Javonte Barnes, a four-star running back from Las Vegas, will be there. Camden Brown is a Pitt wide receiver commit from St. Thomas Aquinas down in South Florida, will be visiting. It's a big weekend. A bunch of unofficial visitors, too. A.J. Duffy is going to be back. I think Travis Hunter is going to be back. It's obviously, it feels like those guys are almost coming back to kind of try and sway those official visitors, those guys who are still up in the air, like the MJJs.
They've got the recruiters coming in to keep the push going.
Yep.
It's the last pitch game for some of these guys, including Marvin. It's the last big push I think they're going to be able to make.
Because I doubt he's going to take one of those December weekend visits, you know?
No, I doubt it too. I agree. And it's... not just the visit, not what he'll be, not what he will be shown and told. It's the game itself too, and I think what he's going to see on Saturday afternoon too. And it's their last best push to try and score the upset and bring him, continue the legacy. So yeah, it's a big weekend on that front too for a lot.
It's a big weekend on a lot of fronts. I mean, we could use this time to transition, because with the NCAA tournament set to start tomorrow, we should definitely give this Florida State soccer team their due for a really, really impressive showing up in Cary last weekend in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, a great response by the team. I mean, they got back the players that were out. They looked like themselves again. I mean, the game against Wake was an adventure. They fell behind early in the semifinal and had to kind of battle it out and, put together. I think that goal, if they end up winning the national title, I feel like that game winner in overtime by the freshman, Maria Lagoa, is going to be like that turning point play where they're going to point back to it and say, this is what got us going again. Because until then, I know they tied it earlier in the game, but really that one, the way it was created, the way it sort of like lifted everybody. I mean, they were themselves again on Sunday against Virginia. They looked so much better than they had the first time they played Virginia, just in general, both at both ends of the field, creating chances again. And Virginia is very good. I mean, they almost tied it in those last few minutes. And the goalie, Christina Roque, stepped up. They made a lot of stops, like they have been all season. And now they're rolling again. I mean, now that, the first round Friday night is a team that they beat 4-0 in South Alabama early in the season. So, theoretically, there shouldn't be an issue for them to get past the first round. But already in the second round, they could end up starting to play some ranked teams, because the second round, which would be next Friday, would be against either SMU or Texas. Both those teams are just at the edge of the top 25. So the role, if they can get it going and now at full strength, this is perfect for them. I mean, to start peaking at this time could take them all the way to California and a very good chance. And the bracket generally doesn't seem like it's too bad for them, because they would not face any of their major rivals from the ACC until the College Cup out in California. That's one luck of the draw that they had, was that, you thought maybe North Carolina, maybe because of the fact that they were a little bit down in the standings this year, you knew they weren't going to be a top seed. But North Carolina got put in the same region as Virginia, so one of them is going to get knocked out before the Final Four. And then, but they wouldn't face Virginia again unless they would play for the title at the end. So that's big, because you avoid that really tough opposition in the early rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Virginia, that the 1-0 win. I mean, an absolute golazo.
Yeah. Oh
from
yeah.
Clara Robbins. I think they tweeted she was the third FSU player to kind of get featured on SportsCenter Top 10 this year for remarkable goals. And I mean, it's. Yeah, there have been some absolute stunners mm-hmm. this season. I mean, in terms of goals, what a player like Abeata Olsen has brought in terms of the finishing ability, but so many other players as well. I mean, they've already blown by the program record for kind of number of players that have scored in a year. Yep. They've had so many remarkable goals. I mean, the big thing for them, you talked about obviously the path to the College Cup. I had to pull this up to check. I knew the numbers were crazy good. Anything can happen. Nothing's a sure thing. The nice thing about being, obviously, Florida State's the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, but as one of the four number ones, their entire path to the College Cup out in Santa Clara goes through their home stadium. They will get as many as four home matches before then, if they won all four, going out to the College Cup. Yeah. In the NCAA tournament at home, all time, Florida State is 47-2-1 at home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's stunning. That's sick.
Yeah, it's sick.
I remember, I think it was 2 years ago. I think it was back in 2019. UCLA came in and just like ravaged them in the Elite Eight. And like, I think they ran away with like a 4-1 win or something like that. And it was stunning.
Yeah.
Because that does not happen at the Seminole Soccer Complex much at all, let alone in the postseason. I mean, here's more stats on that. In those 50 home NCAA tournament matches, FSU outscored their opponents 143-21.
Yeah, it's funny because you see that dominance at home, and it's similar to the men's basketball team, 77-4 at home?
Hey, 78-4.
Sorry, 78-4. That's right, after the Penn win last night. But yeah, that it's funny how home is so good for in a couple of sports in Tallahassee. But yeah, Jalen Howell was asked about that, and you know she says that they feed off the atmosphere. They really do. They like it doesn't seem like it, you know, as athletes you're supposed to kind of tune it out and focus on the field, but they kind of do feel the energy when the place is packed and when the fans are there and that sort of thing. It gives them a little extra juice when they're out there, and I think that's going to be huge. You know, I think Friday they'll be fine as long as they're, you know, take care of business, that sort of thing. But I think when you get to the later rounds and the competition level gets a little tougher, even if it's not ACC teams, like there's some good teams in their region. I think Tennessee is in the top 10. They're kind of on the outer half, could be either a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight matchup potentially. You know, someone like that, or a Pepperdine, I think, is another West Coast team that's pretty good that's in their region. If once they get to those types of opponents, that's where this is going to be critical.
No doubt. We've covered them very thoroughly. You've done a great job on the beat this year, and obviously that'll continue here through the postseason. We should, before we go, we should definitely touch on the start of basketball season as well. We hope for the basketball nuts among you, you enjoyed our podcast exclusively about the basketball teams earlier this year. Both have now played their first game. The women Tuesday night, the men last night, yep. Both really convincing victories. You don't want to overreact too much to it for a variety of reasons, it being the first game and a small sample size, it being an inferior opponent, but both, I would say, validated their preseason rankings for whatever those are worth at the very least.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I was at the women's game. They, it looked a lot like the exhibition game, but a little cleaner, I think, in the sense of their defense looked better. And I know that's something that Coach Sue Semrau stressed, that she wants to see that from her team. She thinks they're not quite there yet, but that's okay, because that's kind of what this early slate is for, to work on that, hone that ability, because they're going to need that, obviously, when they get to the ACC schedule and the type of teams that they're going to face. But for right now, you're seeing some of the elements. You're seeing the post players looked good again. The freshmen looked good again in spots. Their shooting from outside right now is one area that I think that you want to see get a little better. I think they only shot, I want to say, 4 of 19. They were like 2 for 13 for a long stretch there. But that's something that with time, I think, you know, we'll see if they can get into more of a rhythm, maybe work on creating better looks for themselves. But again, so early, and they're going to be home for another 3 games here before they get their first road game, which is really not a far road game. I think they're playing in the St. Pete Classic, but they finally would get potentially a ranked opponent there. So there's time to build up toward the better part of the schedule. And then I know you were there last night, Kurt. The Tuck was rocking 9,000 plus, watching Malik Osborne have his Michael Jordan flu game over there. So
yeah, that was there was doubt over whether he would play. I think he said in the post-game press conference he got 2 days of practice back from the flu that kept him out of the exhibition last week, obviously the same flu that ravaged the football team. And then he still, I mean, if they had needed him to play more, if this wasn't a game that was well in hand by the opening minutes of the second half, they really buried Penn with a really impressive run. I think within 5 minutes of the end of the second half, they were up by 31. So Malik barely had to play in the second half, but still, he finished with 18 and 13. I think he had 17 and 8 or 9 at halftime. It was a really, really impressive showing from him. Who he was a player who you kind of thought was going to have to step up this year. Losing Raekwon Gray, losing Bolsa. I'll be interested to see how much they try and go small with him at the center this year. And I mean, you don't want to read too much into it against, like I said, with Penn, a team that, I mean, obviously a less talented team, but also a team that hadn't played together since the start of the COVID pandemic, because the Ivy League didn't play last year. But all around, I mean, when you lose 50% of your scoring from last year's team, and in your first game you score 105, and I mean, you do it in a game where you shot less than 50% from the floor and 31% from three. You didn't shoot the lights out. You had 15 steals. You forced 26 turnovers. The defense was really impressive. The length of this team is going to bother a lot of teams. And it feels like, having covered a number of these teams now, it feels like this team is starting from a better defensive spot than a lot of recent teams are the teams always get better defensively as the season goes on, which is a bit of a scary thought for other teams if this is kind of where they're starting out. But it was a really impressive showing, especially defensively.
Yeah, and that's Coach Hamilton's MO, right? I mean, they're always going to be – he always wants them to be effective on that side of the floor more than anything. And what's good, too, is they're going to have out of the men and the women, the men are going to have the first big test first, and that's this Sunday when they go to Gainesville. Because, yeah, the Gators, you know, they should still be favored to beat the Gators, but you get a challenge there on that front. I mean, the Gators still have – a pretty decent squad. Colin Castleton, the 6'11 forward, is back. You know, he's been one of their best players the last couple of seasons. You know, and they have a pretty good backcourt. Even though they lost Trey Mann, Tyree Appleby's done a good job for them in the backcourt over there. So you get a little more, and the road game too against the rival, pretty good to kind of, you know, push them a little bit early, in the early going, and kind of keep that team kind of trying to stay sharp and take on a solid opponent before. You know, before they come back home. And they're going to have another one like that down the road next month when they take on Purdue in the ACC Big Ten. We've talked about that. That's another team that has size and some skill in the backcourt. Jaden Ivey and Zach Edey, the big 7'4 center, who already, I think Purdue already won their first game convincingly as well. So you have some of those non-conference games where they're tune-ups, but you also are going to have a few early season challenges for Coach Ham's squad that'll be kind of a good early season gauge.
Yeah, we talked about Malik. You liked a lot of what you saw from Caleb Mills. It was a stat stuffer special, as Leonard Hamilton would call them. And he only made 1 of 4 threes. It wasn't a shooting night for him, but his ability to attack, his ability to defend. Cameron Fletcher had a really impressive debut, the Kentucky transfer. I think he had 5 steals. His length and his athleticism are really going to bother people defensively. Raekwon Evans, the starting point guard, looked like a new player. He never looked like himself. Even the year before, his first year at FSU back in 2019-20, the year they won the ACC regular season before COVID happened, they had Trent Forrest. They didn't need him to kind of be a star. And I don't know if he's going to be a star, but he looks like a different player. It was impressive to see, and I think would do wonders for stabilizing things if FSU gets so much from its veterans. It has a number of veterans, and obviously they led the way last year, as you would expect early in the year with so many newcomers.
Yeah, I think that's always the thing. Is like, I think those guys – having those guys have been through the system is going to be huge just in the transition part of it to this season, because you really don't miss a beat, even though a lot of teams lose the kind of talent that they did. I mean, look at what Scottie Barnes is already doing in the NBA. That just shows you the kind of quality players that they lost, you know, to the pros, and to still kind of not skip a beat when it comes to that. And going back to Osborne, I mean, yeah, you know that Coach M always uses a deep bench, and most of the offense is spread out. But it's good to see Malik kind of take the reins there, because you never know if in a game you might need a guy to kind of, hey, hop on my back and carry you to the win a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, step up and be that kind of leader. And that was good to see, because I think it kind of shows you maybe if that happens in a game, in one of these pressure-packed games later on in the ACC, that's the veteran you need. You know, that's the guy that's going to make those plays on the court and kind of, you know, be that leader for you.
Yeah, no doubt. Said it would be interesting. I mean, obviously they've won 7 in a row. They're looking to make that 8. They're looking to make that where someone who was a freshman in college this year, I think was in, what, 5th grade the last time? 5th or 4th grade the last time Florida beat Florida State in basketball. It's been a while. It'll be interesting to see. I'll be interested to see what that spread is. I'll be interested to see how they value. Obviously, I mean, it's a somewhat new look Florida team.
Does it go back to Billy Donovan? Is that how long it's been?
I don't think Mike White's beaten Leonard Hamilton. I do think so. That's right.
It's probably Billy Donovan. Yeah, that shows you how long.
Yeah,
it's been.
Let me look. I mean,
yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. Because I mean, at this point, yeah, if Mike White doesn't have a win against them, then it makes perfect sense. But yeah.
Yeah, it was Luke's. I think it was Donovan's last year. I think Mike White is – no. Donovan looks like he lost his last year to them. Yeah, right. It was the year where Florida made the Final Four, 2013-14.
Right.
36-3 Florida team was the last Florida team to beat Florida State.
Yeah, and they haven't really been the same Gators team in that sense, not to that level since then. Yeah. But they've been good. They've been a solid NCAA tournament team, but not national title contender like that.
Yeah, they made the one Elite Eight team run in Mike White's second year back in 2017, but they haven't made it. They haven't made it the second weekend since.
Right.
They made it three tournaments, the last three tournaments, and they've lost in the second round of all three.
Yeah, they got hot last year toward the end of the season, and you wondered how far they could go, and then they were upset in the second round by the Cinderella Oral Roberts team in the second round.
I covered that game, actually. I covered that game for the Gainesville Sun, because the Gainesville Sun, our network paper, did not have a writer up in Indianapolis. So that was a pretty crazy game to get to cover.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. That must have been fun.
I think we have given a pretty comprehensive look at the state of things right now, Andre. Plenty of great coverage from us up on the website. We appreciate you for subscribing to the podcast. If you're subscribing to the paper, the website, we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
You can follow us on social media.
For sure. Follow us on social media, Tallahassee.com for all the coverage there. And, you guys can always find us on Twitter. You know that. Fernandez Andre C. Kurt, give them yours.
Kurt, C-U-R-T, M. Weiler.
There you go.
At Gmail.
There you go.
What am I doing? That's my email address.
That's your email. Come on.
You want to email me there.
That's okay.
My personal email address.
It's a long week, folks. This is a really exciting, brutal. It's Miami. Our heads are in the wrong place right now.
I was up until 2.
This man just covered a 9 p.m. tip-off that should have never happened this time of year. This should be reserved for the conference games in January, not now.
We got entirely too many of those this week. This season. That's the problem. It's a lot of late tips, so I got to get used to it, I suppose. But no, we appreciate you for listening. We will be back with you next week. We'll talk about the rivalry. We'll look ahead to Boston College. Talk about the rest of the world of Florida State sports. We appreciate you for listening.